This morning, in this part of Focus, we will return to a subject we've talked about before, in fact, just this week, and that is the issue of ballistic missile defense for the United States. The Bush administration has proposed building a system that would defend against a limited number of incoming ballistic, presumably nuclear, armed missiles. The idea is that if a nation should decide to launch a few missiles, or if a missile is launched by accident, the United States would then have some way to shoot that missile down before it dropped its bomb or bombs on the United States. Within the administration, the idea has many supporters. It was actually an idea that was revived during the Clinton administration, where they were talking about building such a system. Also, this system has many critics. There are people that are concerned about the technical issues. They're concerned about the amount of money that would be spent to build such a system. And they're also concerned that building this would be destabilizing, that it might, in fact, touch off a new arms race. This morning, we'll be talking with Carl Grossman. He's professor of journalism at the State University of New York College at Old Westbury. He has specialized in investigative reporting for more than 35 years. In fact, he chairs SUNY Old Westbury's Media and Communications Program. And for something like the past 15 years, he, in his own reporting and writing, has been focusing on the issue of weaponization of space. He's the author of 6 books. His most recent, Weapons in Space, is published by Seven Stories Press, and another titled The Wrong Stuff, The Space Program's Nuclear Threat to Our Planet. That's published by Common Courage Press. He's also active in television as well as in print. His most recent TV documentary, which he narrates and wrote, is titled Star Wars Returns, distributed by Enviro Video. He has spoken on these issues around the world. He has addressed members of the British Parliament. He's given presentations at the United Nations. He's also written articles for many publications, too many to list them all, but they include things like the New York Times, the Boston Globe, the Philadelphia Inquirer, the Village Voice, Z Magazine, the Boston Phoenix, and on and on. And he's talking with us this morning by telephone. And as we discuss the topic, you're certainly welcome to call in. Perhaps you will have questions or comments. That's certainly welcome. You can be part of the show here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. That's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. And if you match the letters on the phone with the numbers, you get WILL, so that may or may not make it any easier. 333-WILL, toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Professor Grossman, hello.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for talking with us. We certainly appreciate it.
A pleasure.
As you probably know, we have done now 2 programs. The second program this week that we're doing on the subject, trying to talk with, we talked with someone who clearly was a proponent, and we wanted to talk with someone who clearly was a critic. And one of the things that I did when I started out the other show, maybe I'll ask you the same question, noted that the last time we had talked about this topic was last fall. Mr. Clinton was still president, and the question at that point was, what happens with this the effort to develop this system? And at that point, his option either was to say, let's go ahead, let's kill the program, or essentially, let's let the next president decide. And at that time, we didn't know who that was going to be. So and we know what happened was eventually he decided to let the next guy decide. If we look at where we were then as we were talking about it and look at where we are now, aside from the fact that we have another administration, what has changed, or has anything changed?
Well, there have been changes. We have an administration now which is more gung-ho for, and I should perhaps start off right away and explain that missile defense is just one component or one layer in a much broader program of essentially making space a new arena of war. What's being done is they're pushing missile defense. I mean, who could be against defense? And that's the spin. It's missile defense is, when you introduced the program, you talked about the issue of a rogue state is what they're being called in Washington, sending a missile our way, and this is a program designed to deal with that. In fact, If you look at the documents, and I teach investigative reporting, and I've done it, as you mentioned, for getting old now, 35 years plus. If you look at the documents, and actually they're accessible, they're available on the internet. I also, in this video that I've just completed, Star Wars Returns, and in this book, Weapons in Space, present them. In fact, in the book, I reprint pages from these documents. But you've got to look at these documents to believe what's really happening. And what's really happening is that the U.S., I mean, and these are the words that are used in these military and government documents, the U.S. seeks to control space. They use that word over and over again, control. And from the ultimate high ground of space, dominate, they use the word dominate, the planet below. In fact, a motto of the Space Command is master of space. And then as you go into the documents, what you find is that missile defense is, again, a layer, a component, and then there's something called theater defense, and then there's space-based weapons, which is really the key to it all. And there's kind of little items in between, like just last week came the unveiling of the plans for a space bomber, which would do like kind of suborbital flights and drop bombs from pretty high up and so forth. But it isn't just, I just want to point out, missile defense. Now, in answer to your question, at this point, we see the Bush administration absolutely, I mean, promoting and pushing and demanding missile defense and demanding this broader program space warfare. Just let me read from, this is a recent report of the Space Commission, which was chaired by our Defense Secretary Ronald Rumsfeld, composed of 13 members. In the coming period, the U.S. will conduct operations to, from, in, and through space in support of its national interests, both on Earth and in space. And here, another page, power projection in, from, and through space. It's possible to project power through and from space in response to events anywhere in the world. Having this capability would give the U.S. an extraordinary military advantage. So that's the broader program. Again, what your listeners mostly have heard about was just that one component, which is, you know, I mean, it sounds okay, missile defense, but if they knew about, and they should know about, we all must know about, the wider plan, then I think we can understand what has been going on, what's going on now under the Bush administration, and in fact, what went on in the Clinton administration, in which this plan, I mean, it just didn't start with George W. Bush being sworn in January. It's been percolating. It's been going ahead for years. Mm.
Let's talk for a moment about the ABM treaty.
Yeah.
A good deal of the discussion centers on this 1972 treaty that that the United States signed on to, that essentially said we would not develop or implement such a system. And the big point of discussion is here whether it is whether that treaty matters anymore or whether it's important that we continue to stand by it. And perhaps some would say that maybe one of the differences between sort of an answer to that question that I asked, and in fact, the guy from Heritage who was talked with us on Monday actually said this, the big difference between then and now has to do with the administration's feelings about the ABM treaty and apparently its decision simply to walk away from it. Why does the ABM treaty still matter, or does the ABM treaty still matter?
Well, the ABM treaty was developed between the United States and the former Soviet Union, and what it did was restrict both countries from having two sites for anti-ballistic missiles. And the idea was kind of to prevent a cycle of more and more missiles and more anti-ballistic missiles and so forth and so on. Now, what the folks in the Heritage Foundation, which is a rather conservative foundation, and the Bush administration feels is that well, as the president says and as Secretary Rumsfeld says, this is a relic from the Cold War and it's not important. Well, it really is important because, I mean, the thinking back in the 80s was let's get this ABM treaty in place so we're not going to kind of get a cycle which goes out of control. And indeed, if we break the ABM treaty, and we're ready to do that, the administration has been speaking in recent weeks of bumping against the ABM treaty in coming months. What's going to occur is that Russia is, well, I mean, President Putin has already announced this. They're going to, well, for starters, MIRV their missiles. In other words, put multiple warheads on their missiles to amplify the killing potential of their ICBM fleet. But then what, and this is even more serious, if you can find something more serious, what President Putin has said is that if the U.S. goes ahead and breaks the ABM treaty, all bets are off for other, particularly the START treaties, all these treaties that we've been working on for years that were so difficult to develop, to restrict, to limit nuclear weapons and so forth. So, I mean, we were concerned back in the 80s about a spiral going out of control. We have to be concerned now, too, of a spiral going out of control. But just let me add one thing, if I could. Mm-hmm. The ABM treaty is very important, but the bigger treaty, which is an international treaty involving most nations of the world, it's called the Outer Space Treaty. And this was developed it was enacted in 1967. It was developed in the early 60s, in fact, by the United States. Indeed, in both the book and the video that I mentioned that I've done, I interview a man who was deeply involved in the development of the Outer Space Treaty, Craig Eisenrath, and he explains that what we try to do, the U.S., was to de-weaponize space before it got weaponized, to keep war out of space. And we, the United States, the former Soviet Union, and the United Kingdom, introduced this proposed treaty to the world, and it was enacted and ratified by most countries of the world. And this is the law which keeps space for peaceful purposes. And just let me note, in the United Nations last November, now this is under Clinton, not under Bush, there was a vote to, because of what the U.S. is up to, this broad space military program, essentially to turn space into a battleground, to turn the heavens into a war zone. There was a vote to reaffirm the Outer Space Treaty, and the vote was 163 yes. I mean, like the whole world. And what did we do, the United States? And this is under Clinton, let me note again. We abstained. So first the ABM Treaty will go, and then I fear the Outer Space Treaty will go. And all this effort on the Outer Space Treaty to just keep war out of space will go by the books. And what a way to open the new century, the new millennium, to turn the heavens into a war zone.
At this point, probably I should introduce again our guest for this hour of Focus for anyone who might have tuned in. Last little bit, we're speaking with Carl Grossman. He's professor of journalism at the State University of New York College at Old Westbury. In fact, he chairs the Media and Communications Program there. For the past 15 years, he's been focusing on the issue of weaponization of space. He has written a number of books on the subject and contributed articles to many different publications and has spoken on these issues a great deal. We're talking here about the Bush administration's stated intention to build an anti-ballistic missile system for the United States, but also beyond, what sort of plans the Pentagon and the administration has for the idea of militarization of space. Questions are certainly welcome here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. I'm sure that people will recall when the whole issue of the space-based defense against ballistic missiles and also the possibility of weapons location in space was raised during the Reagan administration. And the fact that over time, as the Cold War came to an end and it seemed that there was not so much urgency, it just seemed to be something that kind of went away. There wasn't a great deal of support for it, apparently, in the Congress, even though we spent a lot of money, we didn't seem to get much out of it. And people simply stopped thinking about it until the whole idea of this more limited system was reintroduced during the Clinton administration. But what people, I think, have not realized, and you certainly have written about, is that research has continued to go on all this time on offensive space-based weapons. Perhaps you can talk a little bit about exactly what the United States has done in terms of research on these sorts of things.
It's actually more than research. I mean, again, people don't know much about this stuff because our big corporate media don't report it. Indeed, as a and you're familiar with this, I'm sure. An undertaking out in California at the Sonoma State University,
mm-hmm.
called Project Centered.
Right.
And every year they cite the most underreported or censored stories. And my articles through the years on the weaponization and nuclearization of space, and in fact they're related, indeed the military is thinking it's going to need nuclear power to energize these weapons, these lasers and hypervelocity guns and particle beams it would like to deploy in space. In any case, my pieces have received over and over again, 6 years I've received these awards from Project Censored, and I really frankly hope that I don't have to get another award. I'd much rather see this information on 60 Minutes or on CBS News, Nightly News with Dan Rather, wherever, or on PBS. But it doesn't seem to get out. The spinmeisters are so effective in getting the information out. But in any case, it's not just research. In fact, again, back to Clinton. I mean, one shouldn't be partisan about this because the record of the Democrats has not been so great. I mean, frankly, I think what's going to be necessary to stop this is a grassroots movement in which the people lead the leaders. But in December, under the Clinton administration, the go-ahead was given for the development of what's called the space-based laser, and this is a $20 to $30 billion. That's with a B, program. I mean, just imagine as this thing goes forward, if we don't stop it, the diversion of our national treasure to arm the heavens, as opposed to spending our money for the environment and education and health and getting maybe more tax, the checks that we're getting back, bonuses, whatever they call them, refunds. But in any case, that was given the go-ahead in December under Clinton. Previously, the Alpha High Energy Laser, this is just a few months before that, underwent its 22nd successful test firing. The Alpha High Energy Laser is a TRW device. The space-based laser, which is being developed incidentally at NASA's Stennis Space Flight Center in Mississippi. NASA is supposed to be a civilian space agency, but this isn't too civilian in terms of, it's for war. What we really had, too, is once President Reagan announced Star Wars, this is in 1983, to fend off what he called the evil empire, the Soviet Union, we had all these corporations jump in, like TRW and Lockheed Martin and Boeing and Raytheon. Those are the four major aerospace corporations in the Star Wars program. And they continued to receive, I mean, it was budgeted all through Reagan and then Bush and Clinton at $4 and $5 billion a year. Now under President Bush, he wants the Star Wars program to get $8.3 billion. So again, it's in degree, it's gotten worse. The Democrats in Congress, however, this is the news from the last couple of days, want to cut it back to $7.3 billion. But the Democrats are quite, most of them, not all of them. In fact, last week, Congressman Dennis Kucinich of Cleveland, Ohio, introduced a bill in Congress to ban weapons in space. But most Democrats want to continue research and development of Star Wars. And let me note, I mean, Lockheed Martin and Boeing and Raytheon and TRW get all these government contracts, but in turn they shower the Congress with campaign contributions. I mean, it's quite corrupting, I believe, and they provided a lot of funding for the Bush campaign, and they put money into the Gore campaign. So we have a situation here where, you know, maybe people thought it was over, but it wasn't over. It's not just on the drawing boards. It's not just rhetoric. Systems are being developed. And the problem here is that, well, at this point, the Russians and the Chinese have, I mean, I've heard them make these speeches at the United Nations, ready to strengthen the Outer Space Treaty. Let us not have war in space, they say. And Canada, our neighbor Canada, has been in the lead internationally, working, in fact, with the Chinese and the Russians and the rest of the world in trying to stop this U.S. program. I mean, let me, if I can just read a speech from the Canadian representative at the U.N. This is October 2000, and I was there to hear this. Talks about outer space hasn't yet witnessed the introduction of space-based weapons. This could change if the international community doesn't first prevent this destabilizing development through the timely negotiation of measures banning the introduction of weapons in outer space. It's been suggested our proposal is not relevant because the assessment on which it rests is either premature or alarmist. In our view, it is neither. One need only look at what is happening right now to realize that it's not premature, and he's referring to the U.S. space military program. And then finally, this man is named Mark Vidrakare of Canada. There is no question the technology can be developed to place weapons in space. There is also no question that no state can expect to maintain a monopoly on such knowledge or such capabilities for all time. If one state actively pursues the weaponization of space, we can be sure others will follow. So here you have, you know, the world essentially agreeing to keep space for peace. I mean, that was the object of the Outer Space Treaty. And here you have these countries wanting to strengthen it. And Russia and China, whatever, saying, you know, we'll have even a stronger Outer Space Treaty and verification mechanisms and so forth. But what have we been doing, the U.S.? We've been blocking this Canadian initiative. We've been voting against these, not only in the year 2000, but in 1999, two identical resolutions to reaffirm the Outer Space Treaty. We balked. We refused to support both of those votes. And now we're just continuing on. The Bush administration is saying, we don't care if our European friends, if Russia or China, object to our program. And again, missile defense is a spin. It's a much broader program. We're just going to move ahead. And the result, the end result will be, if we do what we're doing, Russia and China and then India and Pakistan and who knows who else will respond in kind, and they're going to move up into space militarily, and there'll be an arms race in space and ultimately war in space, and no one will profit other than maybe Lockheed Martin and Boeing and Raytheon and TRW.
Yeah. We have, as our guest this morning in this part of Focus 580, Carl Grossman. He's professor of journalism at State University of New York, has been writing about these issues for quite a long time. This is the second program we've done this week talking about the issue of missile defense and other sorts of issues. The very first show this week, Baker Spring from the Heritage Foundation in Washington, D.C., talked with us, making the case for this missile defense, and we also wanted you here to hear from a critic, and that's what we're doing here this morning. Your questions welcome. In fact, the lines are full, so why don't we start talking with people who are listening. We'll start out with a caller in Chicago on line number 4.
Hi.
Yes.
Let me take another tack. Some weeks ago, there was a guy on, I think, this program who took had the opposite argument from yours. And I raised the question, which I'll raise with you and see what you have to say about it. I got no decent response from him. 10 or 15 years ago, maybe even more, there was information coming out in the public press to the effect that we had spy satellites which could take pictures of anything on the ground that were no large, no smaller, well, that were 10 feet or more in size, and the French and the Russians had equipment which would take pictures of things that were about 3.5 feet in size, and these things are currently, I understand, being used for commercial purposes. Why cannot we use these devices to determine who is building a missile emplacement and so on, and thereby preempt the need for this space program that the administration wants, the arming of space, and by if one of these emplacements in some other power in some other country were detected, we could make this information known publicly, have the UN issue a restraint order or something to that effect if this proved to be worthless, this attempt, and we could take our own steps to destroy these emplacements. Is there anything to this argument?
Oh, yes. I mean, we know from 40 years ago in the Cuban Missile Crisis, and that was a U-2 plane, not the satellites with the optics they have today, the surveillance satellites. We could know. We would know. And in terms of the issue of missiles, and again, to get back to this spin of missile defense, in this film Star Wars Returns, this video, we interview retired Rear Admiral Eugene Carroll. In fact, he commanded an aircraft carrier, among other ships. And if I could just quote from Admiral Carroll, it's kind of an extension of what you're saying, sir. He says, missile defense doesn't make any sense, and everybody realizes that. The least likely threat we face is some third-rate nation developing an ICBM and launching it at the United States, knowing it'll get back 50 times what they send. There are all kinds of ways that are cheaper and more reliable, smuggling in a suitcase bomb, for example, to inflict harm and not be subject to instantaneous retaliation. And then what Carroll goes on to say is that what this is really about is turning space into a battleground. We are going into space with lasers. Space is seen as a new place to wage war. Already we are underwater, overwater, on the land, in the air, and now we want to go to another dimension, space. So in summary, sir, I think what you're pointing out, that, like, what is the big problem if any country would start to develop a missile? I mean, that's what we're watching Saddam Hussein very carefully about. I mean, we'd know right away. As you know, again, as to this program, if you look at the documents, and I could perhaps give a website if I could.
Sure.
You can see these documents where the U.S. military talks about controlling space and dominating the planet from space. Listeners can just go to the website of the U.S. Space Command, and that's www.spacecom, that's one word, .af/mil/US space, or another easier way to get it is the company that's produced Star Wars Returns, Enviro Video. They have a website, and it's www.envirovideo, one word, envirovideo.com, and there's links right on the front page of that website to these documents. Another place, too, is the big group that has been fighting Star Wars is the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space, and that website is www.space4peace.org. www.spaceforpeace.org. And in any case, you go to those websites and you link on to the military's website, or go directly to the military website, and you will see documents that are chilling. I mean, I'm looking at one right now, Vision for 2020, and there's a laser shooting down at a target below, and it opens up U.S. Space Command dominating the space dimension of military operations to protect U.S. interests and investment. That's what the military says. So as you study this, as you learn about this, you see that, missiles are not, from a rogue state, are not the real reason for this big program. And that's why what you are pointing out, sir, issues of surveillance from space being, kind of a simple way to deal with the potential problem, are really being ignored.
I appreciate the comments of the caller. I have a number of other people. Hope you'll forgive me if I want to go on to the next person. That will be Champagne, and that will be line one. Hello.
Yes. There's good news and bad news on the media front, even in the last few hours. The good news, A, is this is a show like this, which is really rare, I think. But on NPR this morning, on the national NPR programming this morning, we heard a debate, quote-unquote, or two commentaries, pro and con, about national missile defense. The pro was Donald Rumsfeld, and the con was Sandy Berger, okay? And what Rumsfeld argued was that anybody who recalls the Scud missile attack on the U.S. barracks during the Gulf War would have to be for missile defense. And I didn't really listen carefully to what Berger had to say because I was just so shocked that he would be seen as con. But apparently he has some, sort of strategic or tactical concerns about the ABM treaty and not getting away from the ABM treaty. But I guess I'm just concerned about media coverage of this and how it could be improved if it could be. Although I have to say there's a fairly shocking column in the Chicago Tribune this morning, taken right out of the Bulletin for Atomic Scientists, two full columns on the op-ed page, which detail the whole history of deception. The title of the column is Threat versus Reality. The whole history of lies about the Soviet Union's capabilities. And then what the truth was all the way going back to the 1940s up to relatively recently. So I would just be interested to know your comment, especially on Rumsfeld versus Berger as presenting both sides of these.
Well, I'm glad that that there is a debate, but I think it should be a broader debate. If I can, you broadcast in the Chicago area, and the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists is out of Chicago. Mike Moore, for years, was the editor of the Bulletin. He's now a senior editor. And in a press review, it's called Extra, I interviewed Moore because he and the Bulletin, which is a wonderful magazine, has been writing about these military documents that I'm pointing to, and also this new report of the Rumsfeld Space Commission. And I'm just quoting from this piece that I did for Extra, quoting Mr. Moore, the heart of the report lies in the bold assertion that it is time to weaponize space. And then I ask him, why aren't reporters writing that? Why do they keep talking missile defense, which is only part of it? And he says, under the pressure of time and other tasks, apparently very few reporters have looked at had all the documents, and they do instead of superficial pieces, following the lead of government briefers. So in terms of the debate, I think it's good that there's Rumsfeld and Berger debating. But again, it's just the missile defense issue. And we have to, I think, focus really on what the broader program's about, which I just mentioned, for example, that Vision for 2020 report, which listeners can get on the Internet, or you get a hard copy, too. And after this page, which I just read, U.S. Space Command dominating the space dimension of military operations to protect U.S. interests and investment, just the next page says this is the model for what the U.S. wants to do militarily in space. During the rise of sea commerce, nations built navies to protect and enhance their commercial interests. Speaking of how the great empires of Europe had these armadas, these fleets that ruled the waves, and thus were able to rule the world to protect their economic interests. And then the next page, like what would be the reason for the U.S. moving into space, as these reports speak about, and essentially controlling space, like the armadas of old 500 years ago, control the seas, and thus would be able to dominate the planet below. Now hold your breath and listen to this. This is our Pentagon. This is our military. The globalization of the world economy will continue with a widening between haves and have-nots. So apparently we don't have to be that concerned about that evil empire, the Soviet Union, anymore. But what we are looking at, our military is looking for Star Wars to do, would be to make sure the global economy, of which the U.S. is the engine, keeps purring, and those have-nots don't get out of line. And if they do, we would zap them from space with these lasers and particle beams and these other weapons. Now, I'd like to see a debate about that, because that's at the heart of this issue. I recall this is last year. I was at the British Parliament in London giving a presentation on this, and I was showing this report. And a member of Parliament, a gentleman by the name of Alan Simpson from Nottingham, he took this report as I was speaking, and he declared, "Professor Grossman, we understand. We, too, were once an empire drunk with power." And again, if you look at the documents, you look at the plans, you look what's happening, it's not just missile defense. It's a much broader program, and it's a program involving empire and control. And I just don't think if most Americans knew what our government and our military were up to right now militarily in space, they'd support it, if you would, but I think most people would not.
We just, again, we're now moving into about our last 10 minutes, and we have a number of other callers, and we'll keep going. I want to try and include some other people, and just real quick, again, introduce our guest. We're speaking with Carl Grossman. He's professor of journalism at the State University of New York. He has written a lot about these issues. His most recent book, if you'd like to look at that, one of them is titled Weapons in Space. It's published by Seven Stories Press. He's also contributed to many other publications, we'll just keep going here and get as many people as we can. Next is Champaign County, line number two. Hello.
Hi, good morning. I echo the sentiment about NPR's servile coverage. They're basically just following the line, as, you know, $9 billion or $7 billion. I forget what the Democrats are offering as just a research. And it's really all going in the same direction. There was a book from Syracuse Press called Arming the Heavens.
Wonderful book. And in fact, in my book, Weapons in Space, I interviewed Jack Mano.
Uh-huh.
He was a professor up in Syracuse. He teaches at also a SUNY college, Environmental Science and Forestry College. And he wrote his book. It's a landmark book. Way back, this is in the 80s, I think 84, 85, when Reagan first announced Star Wars. And then again, the focus was the Soviet Union. And I found him, interviewed him about his thinking today. And he believes, it's just what I just mentioned before, that the program stayed alive because of all this vested interests, the aerospace corporations, and the interests of the military in seizing the ultimate high ground and being able to be so powerful ostensibly from space. But as he says, and I quote him again, in Weapons in Space, now there's a new focus, and it's the global economy.
But I brought it up because it just shows this long-term juggernaut of the military-industrial complex, really, you know, knowing where they're going all along. And I brought it up because there's a local fellow from the Arms Control and Disarmament a group here on campus who does game theory about this. And I brought up this Vision 2020, and I learned about it through the conference that you spoke at in England, which is really available on the web in quite a few different ways. There's some great documentation there, too. I brought it up, and he just said, "Oh, that's just graphic design. That doesn't show what they're really planning, the Bush administration." But you know, he's in denial, because the Rumsfeld report, as you point out, and all these ghastly quotes, shows they know exactly where they're wanting to go. And I really applaud your work. I think people should really go to this Vision 2020 document and not dismiss it as just graphic design. The last line in it is, as you recall, space, the warfighter's edge. Just absolutely stunning. And the coverage that NPR did this morning is just, you know, the condominium. And we really need to hear authentically critical voices like yours. And I'll let someone else think, but I had to add that to mention. And
all right.
I can't say how I appreciate your comments. Just again, if other people could get the information, to get the copy of the video, if people would like, I mean, it's at www.envirovideo.com, but there's an 800 number, 1-800-ECO, like Ecology TV 46, and show it in churches and show it at the university. And I mean, listeners will be amazed to hear Senator Bob Smith of New Hampshire, and he is the legislator who wrote the so-called Space Commission's report. And we asked him in the video, we asked him, what about the U.S. controlling space? And here this powerful U.S. senator says, it's our manifest destiny. We went from the East Coast to the West Coast of the United States, settling the United States, and now we're going to move into space. It's our manifest destiny, and space goes on forever. I mean, that's so far from missile defense and so close to, I mean, a real megalomaniacal view of empire. And if anybody, you know, wants to get a hold of the book from Seven Stories Press, it's a short book with these documents, against three pages from them reprinted in the book. You got to see this stuff to believe it. Just give a call, another 800 number, 1-800-596-7437. That's 1-800-596-7437. And just finally, the conference that the caller was speaking about in England, was, or which I spoke at, was organized by the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space, which is the main group, it's the lead group fighting all this. And you can give them a call at 352-337-9274. That's 1-800-352-337-9274. Get lots of information from them, but more important beyond the information from the Global Network are plans for action. Like on October 13th, all around the world is an international day of protest against the militarization of space. And you know, listeners and perhaps groups that they're involved with, it would be wonderful if they could join up with the Global Network. So again, at the grassroots, we can rise up and say, hey, we don't want this Star Wars program, and we can lead our leaders.
Yeah. We have some other people. You know, I have somebody who actually is listening to us over the web who is calling from San Francisco. So I definitely want to talk with this person here on line number one. Hello.
Yes, hi, Carl. I'm David Grace from Abalone Alliance out in San Francisco.
Oh, wonderful to hear you.
Yeah, hey, let's see. One thing I wanted to raise here, I've heard for, 75 years there's been the Maginot Line. Essentially, the Germans were able to get into France by going around their Star Wars of the day. They had a great big wall, and the Germans just went around it. And I've heard this Star Wars described as that essentially we would put all our monies into a Maginot Line. Mm-hmm. And as you read through post-World War One history, it's understood that there were a lot of people who built that Maginot Line and developed it, knowing that they didn't want France to survive. They were essentially the traitors, the Quislings of the day, and they, the Vichy France of the day, and they essentially wanted Germany to win. So they helped design this Maginot Line, intending for France to fall. And I wonder if you had any comments on that specifically. And then secondly, if in fact the Star Wars system, which hypothetically shouldn't work, if it's on a hair trigger, and so essentially we create this huge Maginot Line which forces all of the weapon systems of the world to be on a hair trigger. And if we're in peacetime, we're actually making things more dangerous by forcing things to be on a hair trigger.
Well, in terms of the commercial interests and the Maginot Line, and we know what happened with the Maginot Line, the Germans just went around it. I think that's a very, very interesting parallel. In terms of destabilizing the planet, I mean, the Chinese have said that if we go ahead, they have 20 ICBMs, they'll make many, many more. And then there's ways with decoys and cruise missiles that fly underneath any so-called missile shield. But furthermore, we all must be concerned. It's a dangerous world. As correctly Donald Rumsfeld has said, we have to be concerned, but let's be concerned the right way. Let's be concerned about terrorism, suitcase bombs, and so forth and so on. And just one other note, if I could strike, was you're from the Abalone Alliance. That's an anti-nuclear alliance. In both the book and the video, and again, this is an important report for people to see, New World Vistas, Air and Space Power for the 21st Century. It's a U.S. Air Force board report, and it says in the next two decades, new technologies will allow the fielding of space-based weapons of devastating effectiveness and lasers with reasonable mass to affect very many kills. But then it goes on, power limitations make these space-based weapons relatively unfeasible. However, a natural technology to enable high power is nuclear power in space. Setting the emotional issues of nuclear power aside, this technology offers a viable alternative for large amounts of power in space. See, here you have the military talking about essentially little Chernobyls in the sky, and imagine if the heavens are armed and there's a shooting war, and we'd have these nuclear reactors and these plutonium power packs falling down on our heads. I mean, this is real madness.
I'm going to have to jump in here because we've come to the end of our time, and I also want to apologize. We had more people than we could take, so I'm sorry that if you did not get in on the show this morning. We also want to say thanks to our guest, Carl Grossman. He's professor of journalism at State University of New York College at Old Westbury. You can look for his books, and perhaps you might want to check out one titled Weapons in Space, published by Seven Stories Press, if you're interested in reading more on this subject. Professor Grossman, we want to say thank you very much for giving us some of your time today.
An absolute pleasure.